where nobody knows your name, is not recorded in front of a live studio audience. Hello and welcome to Where Nobody Knows Your Name, a Cheers podcast. I'm John.
And I'm James. It's another finale.
It is a finale and it's a big one. It's a two-part finale, but broadcast on the same night as one mammoth episode of Cheers.
Double finale.
It's the closest to a film I think we've got with Cheers.
A film or a carry-on episode.
Yeah, it's high farce. High farce indeed with this one. It was written by David Lloyd, directed by James Burrows. Masterfully directed by James Burrows, I'd say. It was released on May 14th, 1992. Both episodes back to back. You know, one cold open, long episode.
The stage direction. Coup de grace.
It is, yeah. I think we've been building to this wedding episode for a while now.
We've been laying subtle hints. The listeners got all four clues that this episode was coming.
But I have to say, when I saw the title, An Old-Fashioned Wedding, I was kind of a little bit skeptical because I think The Last Wedding with Rebecca became very soapy in a way. There was, yes, a lot of, it became sort of drama, like drama, lots of crying. It had the whole sort of Robin scandal to it and it felt a bit soapy in a way. And I was wondering how they were going to do a wedding again, make it different and fresh. This episode delivered.
This episode is void of sentiment. It's just physical humor all the way.
With that, shall we jump into the cold open of this episode, James?
Yes, I am ready.
The exposition.
I hope you like exposition.
Yeah, Carla delivers on the exposition in a such a succinct way.
Yeah,
as she's sort of the bar's closing down to celebrate the wedding. All the staff need to go, and they're ushering the patrons out of the bar. We'll use the clip of Carla doing it because she does it so quickly and succinctly.
Move it, you deadbeats. We're closing early. What are y'all bartenders getting married and we're all going to the wedding? Come on, get the hell out of here. If you're still thirsty, go on over to Bob's. Gee, it's nice to see my cousins again.
Done.
And they're her cousins. Ba-dum-tsh. Yeah. Straight in with the jokes.
Yeah. She's wearing a lovely red dress, though. Sparkly.
I know, yeah. Everyone's dressed up to the nines. And Frasier does remark on this as well. And we kick off this wedding episode with a sparring couple of Frasier and Lilith, an unhappy marriage.
A sign of things to come?
Yeah. We've been getting hints throughout this season that they're not as happy as they once were. We see that tension there. And it kind of juxtaposes the love which we see between Kelly and Woody later in the episode.
Yeah. Frasier tries to tell a Noel Coward joke. Doesn't land at all. It reminds me of the Vicar of Dibley post-credit scenes, I guess is what you'd call them.
Well, yes. We know famously Lilith. She's not a highbrow humorist. She loves a sort of definition, a nice sort of slapstick joke. Mm-hmm. That's her kind of sense of humour.
She is the Giles Brandreth of Cheers characters.
But yeah, it's an excellent cold open. It sets us up straight into the episode. And once we are in the episode, it's very much a continuation. We get, I'm going to say this, James, a lovely 10 minutes of bar antics before we go to the next set. And those 10 minutes are so tight and well written. David Lloyd has done a great job with it. But we kick off about wedding presents with Carla and Norman Cliff.
Episode aired on the 14th of May, 1992. And do you want to know something fun about this?
Always.
The weekend that came 2 days after this was my parents' first anniversary of their marriage.
There you go. Did they watch Cheers?
Probably not. I think my mum is a fan of Cheers. I think my dad views it as a typical American sitcom.
He knows it as the sitcom he lost his son to. He used to be such a happy boy. Now it's all Norm this and Vera that. What's Cliff up to? I just want my son back.
What have you done, James Burrows?
God damn you, Charles Brothers. No, that's a lovely fact, James. Very sentimental with the episodes.
I thought it was nice before you turned it into a story of revenge.
But yeah, the whole episode is very much themed around weddings, which we get from the bar patrons even before Woody steps through the door. As I hope your parents got better wedding gifts than Cliff and Norm are proposing here, because they've got a bin bag with a bin in.
Nice. Don't people look like put down a wedding list, like a Christmas list? They go, these are things we'd like for our wedding.
They've went off list. They said people will just get too many toasters.
Yeah.
No one's going to get them a bin. And I have to say, James, this present gift, it's an existential question.
Yeah.
What came first, the bin bag or the bin?
Is it the bin of Theseus?
Is that what I'm just thinking they had a bin bag with a bin inside, and I've never seen that before, and it just sort of made an existential head in my mind of the chicken and the egg.
It's, yeah. We have both have sisters with their weddings coming up. What does your sister have on her wedding list? Because I'd like to, not even bluntness, the forthrightness that my sister had on hers.
I think they went for the same thing then.
Did they go? Yeah. It's like, we'd like gifts, but... We also cold hard cash.
I fully get it because
they can spend it on what they want. Yeah,
and as in the case with Woody and Kelly, they don't live together at the moment. You know,
yeah.
So they don't have a toaster. They don't have a bin. They don't have a bin bag. So giving these as gifts makes sense, and it made sense back then. But now, I mean,
they got everything.
They got everything. They've got a house. They've got a bin. They've got a toaster.
My brother-in-law does want a gong.
There you go. You can do that then.
And I asked my sister, are you okay with having a massive gong in the house? And she went, listen, gongs are in the hundreds of pounds. I don't think we know anyone who's going to buy him a gong.
Are you going to get him a little mini gong? This will go live before they get married.
Yeah. So if they're listening, they might get a gong. They might not.
I think mini gong.
I think he's against the idea of a mini gong. I think I suggested a mini gong, and even that was not a proper gong. But there we go. Wedding gifts. Yeah. Let us know what if you listeners are married, let me know what you got as your wedding gifts. We'd be excited to know, wouldn't we, John?
But I suppose in vain with that idea of even the tradition of giving wedding gifts, the fact that Woody and Kelly don't live together, they're very traditional. And we know that they have, what's the word?
Consummated.
They haven't until now, James.
Yeah. Is that where you were going?
Celibacy.
Yes, right, yes.
And they've been waiting until marriage. But Woody comes in with a very distinct smile on his face, which Sam recognises.
Of course Sam would recognise it.
Sam and all of the bar seem quite proud of Woody. Sam as his sort of older brother kind of figure, I kind of understand a little bit, because Sam's kind of instilled...
that attitudes and some words of wisdom, some not so much wisdom.
And Woody, through this, kind of says, you know, we're getting married today, so it felt right, and we don't worry about it, but we have to get married today, kind of thing.
So, lest they burn in hell.
It puts a slight urgency to the wedding. And speaking of the gifts as well, Carl has what I think is quite a nice gift. Carla's gift is a reading, or like a spiritual reading.
Oh,
putting
yes.
together their birth dates. And because Carla is a single mother, as we know, you know, like wealth is something dealt with this season a lot with the disparity of Woody and Kelly.
Yeah.
She's giving something which is kind of personal to her. That means a lot to her that she can afford and do in a unique way, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, some of the gifts you've given people, you've done similar things. For example, John did a portrait of a friend's dog by burning a piece of wood into a sketch of it, which was very impressive.
Yeah, I'm good at the old secret Santas.
What did you do? I burnt your dog's face into this piece of wood, and it was a very good drawing. It was a very unexpected gift. I think if anyone went, what do you think John's got, I don't think anyone would have said, I think he's burnt their dog's face into a piece of wood. But it was very nice.
I try, you know. And I think that's what I think is nice about Carla's gift, is because she's doing something which is personal to her that she can actually give to them as a unique gift.
Yeah.
The problem is when she puts the dates together, she realizes there's a bad energy towards the wedding date.
Bad juju.
Yeah, so she does the numerology. That's what it's called.
Numerology, yeah. Astrology.
Throws up warning signs. You shouldn't get married on this day. Whatever you do, postpone this wedding. But they can't now because of... well, they wouldn't anyway, I don't think. I don't think they're particularly skeptical.
Skeptical?
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 They're not skeptics.
Yeah.
They're not particularly nervous or anxious about this, but they especially can't now that they have consummated before the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an urgency there. I'm trying to think what else we set up in this really tight 10 minutes of the bar.
Sam and Rebecca are getting more wine for the reception. They acknowledge that they're getting fancy wine from Cheers. Sam has to put on a hairnet.
Yes. Yeah?
a shower cap.
Lots of visual gags in this episode. So yeah, you're totally right. But the Cheers bar has been booked to sort of facilitate drinks for the venue, which at first I went, why can't they just be guests? And then I kind of thought, I suppose they're getting quite a bit of money and they will still attend the events. They're just stocking the drinks for it. There is caterers there as well.
And Rebecca comments on how hungry she is and she's looking forward to cake.
And Rebecca, in this episode, I mentioned about her failed wedding with Robin. This wedding is quite naturally a reminder about that failed wedding that she had and maybe the life she could have had. And the idea of seeing this wedding unfold, she gets constant memories through the episode about what her and Robin don't have and no longer has. And that kind of builds in her sort of maybe temper for this episode at times.
I think she's going through a lot. She's wistful over a relationship which didn't turn out to be and has the anger towards Robin. She's hungry.
Hangry.
But that's an oversimplification, you know. I think with anyone, you know, there's the concept of those stages of grief that one goes through. And I think that she's done bargaining to an extent with Sam of trying to have the child together. But fundamentally, she's still angry at the person who caused her pain.
I think grief as well is a good word because it's grief for the life she could have had and almost had.
And in relation to that, Fraser asks how lavish the arrangements are. Very is the answer.
They're sound like a Looney Tune for a second. That's how flummoxed I am by
you turn into Elmer Fudd.
The guest list on this, because they've got royalty, I'm pretty sure they say that it's a top tier wedding, I think you'd say, and that's why the Cheers gang are almost out of place.
Do you this is a wild piece of trivia. Do you want to know which famous actor of the 20th century and early 21st century was once engaged to a Swedish princess?
Okay.
Christopher Lee.
Oh, okay. I can believe that.
Yeah.
He was a spy.
Yeah, he turned her down. he went, if I became a prince and you were married to me as an actor, our two lives would impact on each other and it would not be good for either of us. Just, you know, I'm impressed by Christopher Lee that he was like, no, I will not become a member of the Swedish royal family.
He was a classy man. He wanted to be an actor. He was a spy. Well, he did everything.
He did. Yeah. Interesting dude. When Kelly first enters, you know, they're like, Woody's like, oh, I just hope I can hide our activities from Mr. Gaines. And then Kelly enters and starts to take off his shirt. And they're like, might need to get a hose on YouTube, you know. They mention Kelly's uncle Roger wanted to perform the ceremony. However, he's going through a rough time after his divorce because he kept coming home and finding his wife in bed with the butler.
Hives.
Yeah.
We close this scene at the bar with something which sort of preempts the chaos that might ensue at the actual wedding. And it's with Rebecca wanting a nice photograph of the gang together.
And Rebecca, as you say, is trying to get a nice photo of the Cheers gang in their nice outfits. There's a lot of one-liners which set up the, I guess, main portion of this two-parter.
This photograph sort of very quickly goes to chaos. And that's how we close the scene at Cheers.
Yes. An interesting other point, and it's related to, as is tradition here at Where Nobody Knows Your Name, we have a bonus episode that we'll be doing in a couple of weeks for you, along with our season review. Rebecca trying to get a photo of all of the gang is related to our bonus episode because it will be on the first episode of Modern Family to feature Shelley Long. And in Modern Family, there's a running joke, one of their many running jokes, that they can never get a good family photo. And it always goes calamitously wrong when they try to get a photo of the many cast members together. And I think that's a nice little similarity between that moment and a running joke of a show in which we discuss in our bonus episode.
Okay, Rebecca, you ready to go?
No. I want to get a picture of everybody first, but it's all dressed up. Come on. Everybody get over here on the steps. You know, it's amazing how different we all look when we're dressed up, sort of sophisticated and debonair.
Hey, for crying out loud, Norm, you stepped on my shoe. You know how long it took me to get that shine on there?
Oh, you think we get a little shoesy-woosy messed up?
Hey, will you knock it off? Oh, yeah, how'd you like a smear on your Tripolis, pal? Hey.
Okay, all right, I've got it set. In 5 seconds, the picture goes off. Darn it. I think my eyes were closed.
Have you heard about the narrative diamond, James?
Is it of any relevance to Chekhov's gun?
In a way, yeah. It's the idea of you have the starting point which is your bottom of the diamond.
Yeah.
And then your narrative slowly branches out and you build, I think it's called narrative furniture, which can be physical props. It can be story threads. It can be rule of thirds of like reoccurring things. But as you grow the diamond out, you get the narrative gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then when you want to close the narrative, you come in again to get that
because the shape
thing
of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which pulls everything together. And I think this episode of Cheers perfectly executes that.
That's relevant because, you know, diamonds, wedding rings and all that.
Mm, yeah. And I think as we go into the next scene, which is this caterer's room before the wedding, which is a perfect way to show the Cheers gang at the bar, we immediately get set up with all of this narrative furniture. The first piece of narrative furniture, James? Pringles. Gotta get the sponsorship in.
Well, Rebecca's hungry, as we say.
Yeah, she's snacking on Pringles. Pringles original. But it's kind of, that's actually used as sort of a plot device between the disparity of the Cheers gang and the professional caterers.
Yep.
Quite, the head chef is quite snobberish to the bar people.
Exactly. And we say this is the main part of the episode. This is 11 minutes in and over 43-minute long episode. All the rest of the episode takes place in this one room.
And as we flesh out this room, Sam arrives with the drinks. He has to put them into the drinks cupboard.
Wine closet. Huge wine closet.
Which sets
it's,
up
it's
one
a walk-in
of
wine closet. But he has to walk past Cerberus, doesn't he? The three-headed dog, yeah. Someone's going, who is Cerberus? I was making a classy reference, John.
I was going, was that the name of the chef?
No. I was comparing it to a hellhound.
Yes, the two hellhounds outside is another thing which we get set up, which reoccurs through this episode. The barking dogs outside the shutter doors.
Yeah.
And along with them, Mr. Gaines is sort of the third dog head.
Yeah.
Because he comes in and very much like the dogs, just sort of barks at Woody quite a bit through this episode and threatens him actually as well. He says the word threat.
You wanted to talk to me, Mr. Gaines?
Yes, Woody. Now that we're almost family, Mr. Gaines sounds pretty cold and formal.
Dead?
But better than that. Have a seat, Woody. Now, Woody, I don't think I've ever tried to hide the fact that I dislike you intensely.
I appreciate that, sir.
The only reason I've accepted this union is that my daughter loves you so very much. Oh, I know she's had other suitors with better backgrounds, but they all had one thing on their minds. They couldn't keep their hands off my little girl, and I hate that. But you, on the other hand, have always seemed to respect and love my daughter. But believe me, if I thought for one moment you didn't respect my Kelly, I'd call off this wedding and have those dogs of mine eat you alive. Do I make myself clear?
Oh, yes, sir.
Now, Woody, I know this sounds like a meddlesome father-in-law giving advice, but it isn't. It's a threat.
And as we heard from that quote there, doesn't like Woody. If he finds out about Woody, feeds him to the dogs like he's a character from Snatch. And again, a diamond-related film.
This is the thing which kind of sets up one of the plot points of this episode is that Woody and Kelly are so amorous is the right word, isn't it?
Amorous, lustful.
They can't keep their hands off each other, which leads them to kind of break the traditional rule of don't see the bride before the wedding. Kelly comes down at one point, but it leads to quite farcical moments of having to hide them being together from Mr. Gaines. And that's one of the plot points in this farcical moment.
Cliff also has a camera which blinds people every time it goes off. And again, just pile on that narrative furniture like it's like someone tried to write IKEA.
Yeah. And I don't want to skip ahead to things because so much goes on.
Norm's loving the party atmosphere because although traditionally you would have the reception after the ceremony, Mr. Gaines saw Woody's family arrive and he went, I'm going to open up the bar. That's what I'm going
to
do.
Yeah, he's sort of steamrolled the wedding to try and entertain people a bit, I guess.
Yep.
We do get snippets of the Woody clan while hearing about them. One of them, I believe, left his prosthetic leg on the bus. So he wants a plunger so he can do some dancing.
Yeah, Uncle Elroy.
We get so much visual imagery through words in this episode. Well, through all the time of Woody's family. Yeah. But it's a shame we don't get to see them more in this episode. But it's great that we get to hear about them throughout the episode.
I think that's on purpose. And they did this with Vera. And they did this with a lot of other unseen characters in shows where they deliberately describe a character so implausible it couldn't be played by an actual human. And it becomes a running joke of how ludicrous this character is. I do like the bit where Rebecca tries to have some hors d'oeuvres and her hand gets slapped away.
This tension between Rebecca and the catering staff is building and building.
Yeah,
but amongst all this, Kelly comes down, as we said, and she goes to see Woody. And while she's down there, we hear Mr. Gaines is going to come in and they have to hide Kelly.
Yeah, exactly. Woody thinks Kelly's in a family way as well, much to Carter's chagrin.
Yeah, he says it's sort of...
You were wondering if they'd fit the word chagrin into this episode.
How could you not for a season finale? I'd be disappointed if you didn't. But in the panic, they hide Kelly in the dumbwaiter,
yes,
which is a little pulley system which typically the food would go in it typically.
Well, it's the whole upstairs downstairs thing, isn't it? That the servants downstairs make the food then send it up in a dumbwaiter.
But the kitchen's upstairs. This dumbwaiter's dumb. Anyway, that's another part of the sort of plot furniture that we're seeing being developed through this, the sort of mechanics of things which are going on, because that will reoccur, I think, maybe about 4 or 5 times through the next 20 minutes.
And we've been waiting for this moment for a while. We were going, oh, this, I feel the farce in the wind, you know, a sense the farce is here. And at about 16 and a half minutes, the farce arrives with aplomb as they shove Kelly into the dumbwaiter.
Mr. Gaines comes down and Kelly's dress is hanging out from the dumbwaiter, and Norm very casually leans to the side and uses it like a dish rag.
Yeah, just breathing on the glass. It's a great bit of physical humor, and it's at this point that you go, okay, here we are. We're in the main event now, everyone. The minister enters, sits down on a chair, needs to get away from the hubbub. The actual minister. He's like, oh, it's too loud, I need to sit down. Mr. Gaines asks Woody if he knows where Kelly is. Despite Woody repeatedly saying the word naked, Mr. Gaines just calls for more bourbon and leaves, and it's a great exchange. We'll put that in.
Woody, you haven't seen Kelly, have you?
No, sir. No,
not me, not before the wedding. I wouldn't want to see Kelly naked.
Married. I mean, I don't believe in seeing or naked marriages or being naked when you see a marriage or any of that stuff, not even with a veil.
More bourbon, Sam. Lots more bourbon.
Yes, sir.
The big bottles.
And then Mr. Gaines has gone back. Kelly is still in the dumbwaiter. They need to get her out. It's kicking off, John. As Sam tells Woody to go mingle. Go mingle, Woody, with his guests. This attractive German woman comes in.
And she captures Sam's eye pretty instantly.
Deliberately so.
And she is there very much to flirt with, in this case, Sam. She seems to have her eyes set on Sam. Sam introduces himself as Uncle Sammy.
Of course he does. She's Cousin Monica.
Well, hello there. Can I help you?
I'm Cousin Monica.
Oh, well, I'm Uncle Sam.
Towel. I'm afraid I spilled a bit of wine right here.
Oh, really? Oh, it doesn't show.
It does, if you look closely enough.
Oh, yes, you're right. By God, that's a beauty. It's too bad you had to get a stain on. Thank you very much. Let me get this for you.
You're as gallant as you are attractive.
Well, I try for an even mix.
Are you part of the groom's family?
Actually, I'm the best man.
I'd enjoy being the judge of that.
She has the demeanor, and I've Googled this word to make sure I'm using it correctly, of a Fraulein, which is German for an unmarried German woman.
But she is married.
She's no Fraulein at all, John.
She reveals that she's
a Frau Lie.
Oh, it's a nice wordplay, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that sets up another part of this plot, which is Sam has sort of come on to a married woman, a Fraulein, as you said. And she's left back into the main reception area, leaving Sam almost to forget about that for now, because other stuff's kicking off.
Yeah. The caterers quit after Rebecca eats the head of the groom.
Sorry, could you say that again, please, James?
Because for some...
After Rebecca eats the head of the groom. I just want to savour that sentence for a second.
Because for some reason, the groom is made of candy. And to me, I was there going, well, serves him right for making it out of candy. You don't make the little figures out of candy. You make them out of, you know, some little plastic or ceramic so that people don't eat them.
To be fair, would you eat the head of the groom, James?
I wouldn't. But also, don't make things out of edible stuff if they're not meant to be.
I don't know. I think Rebecca might be in the wrong here. If I was at a wedding catering and I'm like, I'm just gonna have something small, and I see loads of identical little appetizers, and then I see a bride and a groom, I'm not gonna go, no, I'll just take a bite out of the groom's head.
Are you saying it's a grammatical difference between can I eat the head of the groom and may I?
But this is sort of the last straw for the caterers, and they make a French exit.
A French exit?
Yeah.
Ooh, what does this phrase mean?
I think a French exit is where you leave but don't say goodbye.
A departure from a location or event without informing others or without seeking approval.
There you go. My pun was also accurate.
It is from the 18th century custom among the French upper class of leaving receptions, etc., without formally announcing each departure to the host or hostess.
See? My reference was both a pun on them being French, but also grammatically
classy,
accurate.
Classy.
A French exit, which leaves the gang, or it leaves the wedding without caterers, and the gang decide to pull together to make this wedding work.
Would you call the caterers quitting strike one? I would. I'd say that's the first obstacle they need to fix. Prior to that, it was just misdemeanors.
Yeah. This is a problem this time.
Yeah. It's escalated into a problem. Yeah.
I feel like escalation is about to come, and it comes pretty steep. If there was a graph for this episode,
we're going off
the chart in a second.
Fraser asks for the minister as he is needed for a photo. And I put it in all caps, but do you want to say what happens, John?
You can do the honors, James. You've brought it in caps.
The minister is dead!
Ba, ba, ba. Yeah, this is where we go off the charts.
This is a cute ad break. If you're listening, pour yourself another drink, come back and listen to the rest of the episode. You know, this is where the ad break happened when it aired. Feels fitting for you to do that now.
I love Zencaster.
We're doing it now?
We can do it now, yeah. Yeah. Ad break time.
Shaking it up for this farcical finale. Here you go.
I tell you what, James, I like using Zencaster because we've been using it for a few years, and it is our podcast platform of choice. It allows us to record with ease so we can focus on the farce at hand.
Oh, very well done, yes. We've never had any problems with Zencaster. It's smooth, user-friendly, has a great user interface, and it's an all-in-one podcast platform for all of your needs. So if you want to use Zencaster for your podcast, then go on over to zencaster.com/pricing now and use the code NORM to get 30% off your first month of any Zencaster paid plan.
The minister's dead, James. What a climactic episode. This is where I think we're at the edge of the diamond.
Well, like the most wide part.
We're now seeing everything come together.
Strike two, the minister's dead.
we're in the sort of end game of this episode. We've finished part one, and the diamond's going to close in as all of this narrative and plot furniture cascades in on itself.
Rebecca suggests Cheers season 10 finale, act two, Electric Boogaloo.
We hear Fraser say,
I trained as a physician. Believe me, he's dead. You don't make that mistake twice.
I'm not sure. I know he was part of the Gary's death joke, but I'm not sure if this was in reference to him confirming Gary was dead at one point.
It could be. That's the more wholesome.
That's the way I took it. From here on out, it's all slowly downhill as the gang try and keep the wedding afloat. They've decided this is Woody's day. We're going to make it happen.
Yeah, it's the farce as thick as pea soup in a mist. Woody enters the kitchen. The gang shuffles across to hide the body. Carla, and put the quote in, because Carla keeps not so subtly implying that minister is dead.
Listen, I didn't get a chance to thank you guys for making this such a wonderful day. Helping me out with Kelly's dad.
We'd do anything we could for you, pal. Anything humanly possible.
No, you would, Sam. I know you all would, and thank you all. And this is just the greatest day of my whole life.
Oh, well, that's terrific. Say, how would you feel we had to cancel it?
What, are you kidding? No way. Well, why would we?
Oh, I don't know. You know, say the minister was
called away.
He's retired, Sam.
That's for sure.
His wife died 10 years ago. He doesn't have any family. From what I hear, he hardly has any life at all.
You heard right.
Then they throw tiny Rhea Perlman into the wine closet.
Yeah, they decide the best thing to do with the minister is put a blanket over him. Woody comes in and they all shuffle along, building a wall, a human wall between Woody's eyeline and the dead minister with a blanket on his head to block him being able to see. And this is where they make the decision. We're going to have to carry this wedding. They remember that conveniently Kelly's got a minister uncle who will be able to perform the wedding. They just need to convince him to do so.
Cliff, and I've put it in the notes here, so I'm going to go, Cliff asks, what's up with mortality? What's up with that? What's up with that?
This episode has lovely callbacks all the way through as well.
Yeah, but then he admires the minister's watch, and Norm has to encourage him not to steal a dead man of the cloth's watch.
We do also find out that the minister doesn't have any obligations, relationships, family, and I think that's what puts it into Cliff's mind, that he might get away with it.
Yeah, it's just, there's just so many moments in this episode where you're going, what is going on? The gang are given tasks, aren't they?
Yeah, Sam very much takes the leadership role and assigns people jobs.
He's best man. That's what he's got to do. Yeah. Yeah.
And he assigns, Norm and Cliff are going to take care of the body.
Norm and Carla have to hide a dead body in the closet while Rebecca ices the cake. And she thinks she's got the hardest task.
And as part of this re-icing the cake, Rebecca has to fix the little groom by replacing his head with pate.
Yep, which Rebecca makes a great joke and goes, it's Woody, it's fine. Cliff brings in Deputy Minister.
Uncle Roger, I believe?
Uncle Roger, yeah.
He's got a sort of Father Ted vibe to him, I'd say. Not Father Ted specifically, but he feels like he could slip into that universe quite naturally.
I love weddings!
he loves everything. He pretends he knows everyone. And then as soon as they're
sort of out of earshot, would you care for a cup of tea, Father? It's got that same vibe, yeah.
And he's so absolutely cheerful, and he really wants to do the wedding. The problem is he's a bit drunk, and the solution is get this guy black coffee.
Yeah,
and he loves black coffee.
Uncle Roger is a brilliant guest in this episode. Lilith comes in to ask what is taking so long. The ceremony should be started by now. And Sam goes, why don't you just go out there and entertain people with your natural talents? And she goes, oh my God, someone died.
Lilith is thriving in this episode, I'd say.
Lilith has embraced her inner entertainer.
Throughout this episode, I think we should just tick off all the Lilith moments.
Yeah.
Because she runs through the talent show of things. She's singing, she's dancing, she's playing the spoons.
At one point she grabs some cleavers to try to juggle them.
Yeah, she's very much the life of the party in the reception area, we assume. It's just a show we don't get to see at times, but I think the nature of how they've set up this episode is what I love about it so far, because we get this turnstile door of all these characters coming in.
You mentioned Father Ted in passing. Graham Linehan had a rule for Father Ted where he went, I don't know how many sitcoms there are about Irish priests, but a rule was that we never see them leading a sermon. It leads to a great gag in Father Ted. He goes, oh, I better do it quick. And he walks in one door, and then 2 seconds later comes out and goes, right, let's go. Similar thing, just the revolving doors, and the doors become a gag in themselves.
And all sorts of characters emerge from these doors, which leads us to meeting
a German military man
who very sternly approaches Sam. He does not speak English at all.
Yes, some people call him Maurice.
Well. What? People call him the gangster of love. Is that what you meant?
Some call him the space cowboy.
Okay.
Because he speaks of the pomponence of love. No, his name is Maurice, Chief Maurice.
Oh, I didn't catch his name in the episode at all.
I think his name's Chief Maurice. Someone's called Maurice.
I'm going to call him the gangster of love, I think.
Someone's called Dieter and someone's called Chief Maurice.
Is this perhaps a good time to talk about the cast? Because I think we've met everyone at this point.
We've met everyone. Jackie Swanson as Kelly Gaines. Milo O'Shea as Uncle Roger. His career spanned more than 60 years. He also appeared in 1940s Contraband, Great Expectations, ITV Television Playhouse, Z Cars, Carry On Cabbie, ITV Play of the Week, Ulysses, Romeo and Juliet, Journey to the Unknown, Barbarella, Journey into Darkness, Out of the Unknown, Steptoe and Son, Ride Again, Microbes and Men, The Purple Rose of Cairo, St. Elsewhere, Who's the Boss, The Golden Girls, Murder in the Heartland, Spin City, Oz, Moonglow, The West Wing, and many more. Obviously started off in the UK there.
That's what I was going to say. I was anticipating Father Ted to be dropped at one point then.
Richard Doyle as Mr. Walter Gaines. Colleen Morris as Monica. She also appeared in Mike Hammer, K-9, Hardball, Full House, Baywatch, Death Becomes Her, Bodies of Evidence, Valley of the Dolls, and many more. Mark Voland as Dieter. He also appeared in Dynasty, Hill Street Blues, Max Headroom, Moonlighting, Falcon Crest, Growing Pains, Hunter, Columbo, L.A. Law, Coach, Dream On, Married with Children, Murder, She Wrote, and many more. Daniel Gerrell as Chief Maurice. He also appeared in One Life to Live, Dick Turpin, Chariots of Fire, Miami Vice, A Man Called Hawk, Drop Dead Fred, Knots Landing, Seinfeld, Sex and the City, Law and Order, Ugly Betty, The Good Wife, Blue Bloods, Burn Notice, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, The Blacklist, and many more. Richard Merson as Dr. Chatfield, who was the original minister. He also appeared in Emergency Ward 10, No Hiding Place, Theater 65, The Old Curiosity Shop, Crib, Night Court, Star Trek The Next Generation, Dragnet, Quantum Leap, and many more. Don Bennett, Mary Jane Wrangler are both uncredited as wedding guest, and Philip Pullman is uncredited as Phil. Do you know who was also invited to Woody and Kelly's wedding? I'll give you a clue. It's an old friend of Jackie Swanson. A well-known person, but an old friend of Jackie Swanson.
I know who it was, James.
Ah, you Prince. Did your research. Prince was there. Prince was a wedding guest, yeah.
Which is a surprise. I think they should have had him like in the turn door at one point. Yeah. Just not come through the door. Just the door swings open. Prince is casually there with Phil.
It's just him going, "Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to talk about this thing called live." Life.
You know, I feel like another sitcom would have took the cheap joke and made him Uncle Roger.
Why?
I don't know. I feel like if Prince was on set, I think they would have coaxed him into it.
Yeah. Not you, Prince.
Well, Chief Maurice enters the bar. I was going to say the bar. I'm so used to saying the bar. Enters the kitchen.
Yes. Yeah.
He imbues a lot of farce into the scene. We see the character struggle to communicate with him. And Sam goes, "Does anyone know German?" And Rebecca comes out and just shouts at the man.
shouts loudly and slowly in English.
About how she didn't learn German. Yeah. No sense there, but...
This is how it felt like a Carry On episode, because Maurice never speaks English. He's just an angry German man. And it feels very Carry On, very Fawlty Towers, very Fawlty Towers, actually, in that there was an episode called The Germans. But yeah, Rebecca thinks the soldier wants the bathroom, so she sends him back to the party. Monica returns. Maurice gives her an angry comment, and she tries to apologize for her husband as he's gone back into the party. Sam tries to back away, as he wants no part of this fight, and she gives him her underwear and leaves.
Yeah, she doubles down with the seduction and says that her husband is gone for the weekend afterwards as well.
Yes, exactly.
Meanwhile, Uncle Roger is sobered up.
Yeah. Woody's returned. He wants to say hi to Kelly. Lilith comes in to get some spoons, as you said, and sings When You're Smiling. Sober Uncle Roger is still bad. Like, not great.
In his sober eyes, he decides he does not want to perform the wedding at all.
He hates weddings.
He hates weddings. He's the total opposite of Drunk Roger. Drunk Roger loves everyone and everything. Uncle Roger, sober, hates everyone.
Yeah.
Frasier, as a psychiatrist, is then sort of assigned the task to reason with him.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, his task for the rest of the episode. The tasks evolve, John. Tasks evolve. Mr. Gaines enters looking for the minister, the dead one. Rebecca feebly claims that the minister is racing the caterers and waiters in the park. I don't know why she claims this, John. I don't know why.
She's panicked. But Mr. Gaines decides instead he'll just grab a bottle of wine from the closet.
And for those keeping track, where's the body now, John?
In the closet.
In the closet.
That begins the sort of how do we distract him? Everyone sort of runs to sort of try and distract him. Rebecca nearly, I would say, very nearly, I think that would have broke his leg.
She kicks a table in front of him. And I think Richard Doyle was actually hurt by that. It looked like he was.
But luckily, Kelly comes out, which is the perfect distraction for a father on the day of his daughter's wedding.
You show me this disrespect on the day of my daughter's wedding. There's a lot going on. Sam's on point this episode. Sam asks Cliff to take a photo of Kelly and Mr. Gaines, knowing that the camera can blind people.
And they do that. And the flash goes off. They blind the pair of them. And as they do, Carla and Norm escort.
Transport.
What's he called? I keep wanting to say
Chatfield. Chatfield, Dr. Chatfield, the dead one.
They escort the body. across the kitchen in a panic and put it in the dumbwaiter.
Of course they do. Of course they do.
Because Sam, quite, you know, you said he's a farmer on all cylinders. He says, "Ah, this dumb waiter and as part of conversation.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
To angle where they should put the body. So they've maneuvered it to the other side of the kitchen. They can relax for now.
While Mr. Gaines is in the wine closet, Woody comes downstairs tucking his shirt back in. We know what you've been up to. Sam throws him outside to the dogs. Collects a button needed to put on Kelly's dress that he bit off, dirty man.
Kelly comes down asking for assistance to sew the dress up.
Yeah.
Rebecca tries for a bit between fixing the cake. Can't do it. Yep. And then Cliff comes in, who has sewing skills because his ma always taught him that they were important skills that every man should have, along with crocheting and a myriad of other textile-based skills.
Yeah. Cliff's taking Kelly upstairs to sew her dress. Woody comes back in, bit chewed up by the dogs.
Yes. He's been mauled, I think you'd say. And he gets sent upstairs by Sam because hopefully Cliff will be able to repair his trousers.
Mr. Gaines goes back to the party where Lilith is now yodeling. Sam thinks that they're almost on track.
They check the dumbwaiter and there is bad news because the body has fallen out of it in the basement.
Oi.
And of course, James, there's one solution to that.
Yeah.
Send Carla down.
Well, it's between Carla and Norm, and Sam went, let's go for the small one.
This brings on the sort of the rule of thirds, because Carla doesn't get dropped down once, not twice, James. Maybe not even three, it might be four times.
At least three times.
Whilst they're trying to pull Carla back up with the body, various people come in, including
Monica, and Sam just keeps dropping her.
Mr. Gaines comes in, I believe, as well.
The phrase I put here is plunging Carla into unknown depths.
They retrieve the body from Carla, but then before she's able to step out, they drop her again. At this point, Sam is too scared to actually let her back up because he fears that she'll hurt him.
Yep. And then Uncle Roger returns.
Frasier has not been able to coax him into performing the wedding. Him and Sam discuss that Roger was a lot more amenable when he was drunk.
Aren't we all? Aren't we all?
Which leads to one of my favorite lines, which is,
Sam, I give up. I've tried every known therapy. This man is beyond the help of medical science.
I don't understand this. I mean, he was perfectly happy when he was drunk.
Calling Dr. Daniels. Dr. Jack Daniels.
Which sort of solves that problem, really. They're just going to get him hammered.
It reminds me of that Good Place joke as well. Whenever I had a problem, I just threw a Molotov cocktail at it. Boom, right away, another problem.
better a drunk officiary and then no officiary.
Yeah.
The chief comes back into the bar. Not the bar, back into the kitchen, and he is angered. He comes in with a sword, and he's flaying it, trying to kill Sam.
When Reese chases Sam with his false sword, Frasier diffuses the situation by calling Sam a Falchman, which, by context, we gather Falchman to mean unthreatening to their marriage, basically.
What I thought was interesting in this little quick sequence.
Yeah.
Is with his sword, he's flaying it around, and he chops the icing off the top of the cake, giving it a nice smooth finish.
Lovely.
Doing Rebecca's work for her.
Oh, done. Sam thinks he's fine because the movies are going, Falchman, he's fine. Sam takes something out of his pocket to mop the sweat away, and what is it, John?
It is the stockings.
Oh, and then he gets angry again. Or Falchman could just mean wrong man.
Maybe.
But then a term is used, which, because English borrows from Germanic, we recognized.
Yes. Unmistakable, really.
Er ist bestimmt der falsche Mann! Er ist ein Puffer!
Well, I tried to tell you.
Ein Puffer! Herr Thaler, der beste Mann ist ein Puffer!
Ein Puffer!
Ein Puffer!
What's a poof there mean, anyway?
This assumption is quite lucky for Sam because it means that the guy leaves.
Yeah.
And Sam can just get on with the task at hand, disposing of a body.
Yeah, Sam asks Frasier what it means, and Frasier goes, well, you don't have to worry about the German draft board, which I thought was a good response.
And from here, we get we're at the end of that diamond. We're really heading into the fine point now because everything is starting to come together. And the next thing we get is them sort of getting prepared for the wedding at hand now.
Yeah. Cliff complains that he couldn't find a bottle of Bactine and intends to sue. But drunk on your wrong... drunk on your wrong... The minister's drunk again.
There's always one at a wedding who goes too far.
Drunk on drunk. Yeah. Drunk on your wrong is back. You know, I was, you know, embodying his spirit.
Cliff comes downstairs, as you said, and he leaves Woody and Kelly upstairs. Mr. Gaines comes in saying they're ready for the wedding.
Yeah.
And he goes up to find Kelly, but because Sam knows he's up there, he shouts.
Yeah, because Woody and Kelly might be up to their old tricks.
Finally, we seem to be ready to start the wedding. I'll go upstairs and get Kelly.
No, Mr. Gaines.
Right, Sam, you get Woody. Let's do it.
All right, you go upstairs, Mr. Gaines, to Kelly's room.
Sam, please. You're yelling loud enough to wake the dead.
Oh, yeah, if only I could.
Sam looks outside to see if Woody's jumped off the balcony or whatever out the window, and we see the dogs are whimpering.
Oh, this is unusual. What could have done that, John?
An angry Loza pony.
Hell hath no fury like a Carla's scorn.
Yeah, she's almost more terrifying than this chief guy with a sword.
Yes.
Her weapon of choice? A camera. She pins Sam down and just flashes the camera in his eyes to blind him.
Meanwhile, there's a nice moment where Mr. Gaines is walking Kelly through the kitchen.
We get the reveal that Woody found the best hiding place that he could, which was under the dress.
Under her train. Yeah. The guys celebrate the success, and Sam tells Woody how proud he is of him, which is nice.
It comes to a nice ending. As nice as it can be, because Norm does try to punch Woody in the face.
You know, we know Norm's feeling about marriage. Rebecca and Carla stumble into the party. Carla's limping. Rebecca's just exhausted. But they're talking about how they managed to achieve everything together, despite the issues, which is nice. Mm. And then we get a slow pan, don't we?
Yes. And it's massively done by James Burrows here, really, because he goes through the whole scene, the moments we sort of remember as he pans across this kitchen, and we land on the gate, and we're not the only thing that does, because the body falls out of the wine closet and smashes into the cake.
Well, there you go. End of episode. What a way to end the film.
Oh, I want to see what happens next. Honestly, I was really pleased with this episode. When I saw it was a wedding one, I was a bit dubious, but I think David Lloyd and the writing team around this did an amazing job at sort of subverting my expectations of what it would be. Yep. And delivered a really tight, farcical narrative, which sort of pulled into everyone's strength. And it was probably the most ensemble we've seen Cheers.
Watching it live would have been incredible. Just choreography of it all. Incredibly well done.
There's a Vulture article. It's a fairly recent, when you put into the grand scheme of things, 2015, which sort of just looks at this episode as a whole and how Cheers very much sort of subverted expectation around what a wedding episode would be by not showing us the wedding at all and putting it in the kitchen in a place which you probably wouldn't normally see the wedding setting it in the run-up beforehand and that being the finale. Saying how this is Cheers' approach to tackle these kind of episodes and sort of really taking the writing into the sort of most comedic way to tell the story.
Yeah.
It's a good article. There's a little bit of a quote. It's wonderfully Cheers' take on what a wedding episode of television should look like, just as sort of Always Sunny or Community would do nowadays, where it'd be far different than the sappy Norm.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of idea, ending the episode where the wedding starts. And I think that's a wonderful thing that they did and a great decision they took.
It's a great idea. Yeah. And a great finale. Hello, Cliff. What do you have here? Well, wedding invitations. They're a bit late, mate. Yeah, a bit late. but, you know, we've seen it. Or we saw the run-up to it. Yes, we had fun. Thank you. Yeah. But as usual, before we open our letters, we have to give a shout out to our Norms on Patreon. So this goes out to Treb Curry. If you want that special Norm treatment, then check out our Patreon page for that and so much more. I have a question here for you, John. Rebecca describes some categories of wedding guests. What are they?
Ooh, royalty.
That's one.
Tycoons.
Yep.
And I don't know a third.
Philanthropists.
Yeah. That's basically tycoons. Nah, not really. No. They're charitable, allegedly. In this episode, we see Lilith writing a card, and Frasier becomes quite misty when he hears the card because it reminds him of the first time. He says, "I'll never forget the first time I met you, Lilith."
Yeah.
When was the first time we met Lilith as an audience, James?
Do you want the episode title?
Yeah.
Second time around.
Yeah, season 4, episode 17.
Wonderful performance from B.B. Newirth back then, aired on her TV debut night. Mm-hmm. She had that and one other thing. What are some facts about Kelly's birth?
I was about to say 8 stone. Is that right? 8 pounds. 8 pounds, 0.3.
No, well,
blonde hair.
Yeah, had very fine hair. Yeah,
she had a birthmark on her shoulder.
Yeah, so you mixed two things together there, but I'll give you the point because I'm feeling charitable. She was born 8 a.m. and weighed 7 pounds 3 ounces. Had very fine hair and had a tiny birthmark on her shoulder. Doesn't know her star sign, though. All she knows is that she's not a Virgo anymore. I've got another question here. What unusual, in that we've not seen him wear it before, what unusual item was Walter Gaines wearing?
I was very, very quick to... I was going to go, a shower hat for Sam. Walter Gaines just threw me off. I don't know.
It's a bit of a trick question. The answer is a mustache.
I thought he always had one. And James, it would be wrong of me not to ask this question for a series finale. What earrings does Carla wear in this episode?
Sparkly hoops.
Nope.
Well, it was a good guess.
It was a good guess. It's sparkly hearts. There's three hearts on each earring.
I think I was pretty close. Last call. Last call of the season, John.
Oh, a wedding cake? That's ruined. So we probably can't have that.
Yeah. Wedding cake with a dead man. How about pâté?
Oh, yeah. Pâté sounds good.
Head of pâté. Mm.
With a little figure attached still. I think the whole figure.
How about some pâté canapés? Yeah? Lovely?
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah. That's a nice way to end this episode.
Lovely stuff.
I really enjoyed this episode. I think hats off to the whole creative team, the cast, because to pull this together for this sort of mammoth episode, they did a great job with it. I'm looking forward to talking about the season as a whole in 2 weeks' time.
We're going to have a good time, and then we're going into our final season, John. Can you believe it?
I can't, James. It's been a long journey, but I've enjoyed it. I'm excited to get into the final season in a couple of weeks. Until then, we're going to have a little week break, as we normally do, with a promo video coming up. And then we'll have our season 10 review. But until then, this has been the season finale of season 10.
Thank you for listening, everyone.
This has been Where Nobody Knows Your Name, a Cheers podcast.